Welcome to episode 223 of the Various Sundry Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Harmon, joined live from the Vault Studio, the beautiful campus of Grace College and Theological Seminary, by my good friend, my colleague, my co-host, and the man who is ready for the end of the world today, John Scott Sloat.
It's eclipse day.
It is.
Eclipse day.
Yeah, we're recording before the eclipse.
Like an hour before the eclipse.
Yeah. So assuming the world doesn't come to an end, this episode will make it out.
Yep, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we're under a little bit of a crunch here to make sure we get that get this recorded. And
over to the watch party.
Over to the watch party at the library.
Yeah.
Outside the library, obviously.
I went in 2017.
I did not.
It was I don't remember much other than walking outside. It just felt eerie.
Yeah.
It feels very strange.
Yeah. Yeah.
But.
Yes. Another thing that happened today, you were recognized for your 10 years of service here at Grace College and Theological Seminary.
Yep. Yep. Was started as an employee in 2014.
Yes.
It is now 2024.
Yes. Well, okay. So that just counts
full-time.
For full-time service.
Full-time employment.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Because I was an ARD before that, grad assistant. I guess technically doesn't count.
Correct. Correct. Yes.
Supposedly.
Yeah.
And a student employee before that.
Correct.
Really, I've been an employee in some scope or fashion since basically 2007.
Yeah. Yeah. Except for your year of exile in Louisville.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yes. It was also noted today as part of your tribute that you began here at Grace as a freshman in 2006.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is the year I began teaching here at Grace.
Yeah, yeah.
You were one of those bright-eyed, you know,
yep,
optimistic freshmen coming in.
That's right. Yeah. Honestly, I don't think I was bright-eyed or optimistic. I was just like, let me keep my head down and survive. That was much more my outlook, was survival.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Well, if you would like to contact the show and congratulate John Scott Sloat on his 10 years of service, of full-time employment here at Grace, you can reach the show on X at V&S Pod. You can email the show, variousandsundrypodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook and on YouTube, and we would love for you to leave a 5-star rating and a review. I haven't checked lately.
I haven't checked in weeks.
Yeah, I haven't either. So, all right, John, let's talk some sports.
Okay.
Over the weekend, the Final Four for the men and the women, but let's talk men first. So the Saturday games, did you get to watch those, the semifinals?
I watched the Purdue game.
All right. That was the early game.
The early game. And then I went to bed in the midst of the second game.
Of course. Yes. Yeah. Thoughts on what you saw?
I think Purdue looks pretty good.
Yeah.
They look tough to beat. They're running into a buzzsaw in UConn who seems almost unbeatable at this point. But we'll see. We often don't get two very good teams that we knew coming in are going to play for the championship. And that feels like what we have.
And I feel like they match up reasonably well in terms of personnel. So I hope it's a good, close, competitive game.
Which coach do you like better?
Oh, Matt Painter.
You like Matt Painter better than Dan? Yeah. Dan Hurley?
Yeah.
Why? I don't.
I think you might know why.
Tell me why.
At the risk of potentially offending some of our listeners, he's got a bit of that Jersey edge to him.
Oh, Dan. So Dan over the weekend or maybe even today said, the thing I'm most excited – the biggest motivation I have in being here is not dealing with the transfer portal because we're still playing.
Yeah.
And there's part of me that's like, I get it. Yeah. Like that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. But it's just – I mean it's – Exhibit number 4 million, why the NCAA is just dumb.
Mm-hmm. Hold it off till May, the transfer portal.
There's no reason that you, like, that there's just no reason for it.
Yep.
It's not like they can go enroll right now.
Mm-hmm.
So In the words of Nate from Ohio, they need to get their heads out of their duffel bags.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about the on-court product. I mean, by the time this drops, obviously the game will be played. I still think UConn is a better team and they'll probably win. I'm rooting for Purdue, though.
It feels like Purdue – is it fair to call Purdue a one-trick pony? They kind of give the ball to Edie inside, and if he can work a hook shot or some sort of layup, he goes for it. If he can't and he gets doubled, he kicks it out and they shoot a three. It's a very good trick.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it feels like that's the game plan.
Yeah, for sure. It is. On my Twitter feed, I see a lot of basketball stuff. And there are plenty of people who just, moan and complain about, oh gosh, Purdue is so boring to watch.
I don't think that.
Well, I don't think that necessarily either. But my response is, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
It works. Like, the goal is not, ooh, look how pretty.
Sure.
The goal is win the game.
Yeah.
And when you have a 7-4 center, throw the ball inside.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's just fascinating to me. Like, his ability – like, what makes Purdue interesting to watch is how huge Zach Edey is and what he does with the ball. And I think he does – I think he's actually a pretty athletic 7-foot-4 guy.
I think he is too, yeah. I mean, he grew up playing tennis and baseball.
Mm-hmm.
I think he is a very athletic guy. I don't know how he'll translate to the pros because there just aren't post players like that. I think he might just be too one-dimensional.
Yeah.
But you're also 7-4 and you're pretty athletic. Like he's I think he'll be able to find a spot, like maybe as a bench player or something. But
yeah, good opportunity for a team to zig when everybody else is zagging.
Exactly.
You know, I mean.
Yeah. I mean, if he can protect the rim and rebound, there are plenty of guys like that in the NBA who are not scorers, except for like of offensive rebounds or something.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's run for them. Their expectation is you rebound, you protect the rim, and your points come from offensive putbacks.
Yeah.
There's a place for a guy like that in the NBA.
It's hysterical to me that we're talking about a 7-4 guy in the national championship game who dominates. Does he have a spot on an NBA team?
It's just it's style of play.
Yeah.
It's style of play. So it'll be interesting to see what becomes of that. Since we're on the men's side, we should mention just today as we're recording, I think a pretty shocking news development in the world of college basketball. John Calipari leaving Kentucky to go to Arkansas.
Yeah, that's pretty wild.
It's not wild that he's leaving Kentucky because there was discussion as to whether he'd get fired at the end of this year because they've won one NCAA tournament game in the last like 5 years.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's two. Like, but, they've consistently come in as a higher seed and lost. And so a lot of unrest in the Kentucky fan base. So it was decided they'd keep him. And now out of the blue, he bolts for Arkansas.
Yeah.
So in the conference, you don't often see interconference sort of stuff like that. And let's be honest, Arkansas is a very good basketball program, but it's not a blue blood like Kentucky.
No, it's not Kentucky. Didn't Arkansas win a tournament game? Not this year, but last year?
Probably.
I feel like they did in their – did their coach rip off his shirt? Like what happened to that guy? Do you remember this? I think it was Arkansas.
Was that an Arkansas guy?
That might have been. Anyway, but John Calipari feels like a northeastern used car salesman to me.
Yeah, for sure.
Always has. And this feels very northeastern used car salesman sort of move.
Yeah, for sure. A tidbit that came out today is – the Ohio State media reporting John Calipari privately expressed interest in the Ohio State job when it came over.
How would you feel about that?
Would hate it. hate it. I would be so – like it would cause the existential crisis. Like, can I root for this team?
Really? That would have been great content for the show. Like, I mean,
can I root for this team?
Potentially years of content for this show.
Yeah.
What nutty thing did John Calipari say that has Matt upset now?
Yeah. Now, or it could just be the men's basketball program is just dead to me. It's like, wow, they don't exist until they get rid of him, you know.
Wow.
Anyway.
Who would you root for instead?
I don't know if I'd root for anybody.
Really?
College basketball? Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I always have a soft spot in my heart for my alma mater, Ohio University, but they're obviously, you know.
They're definitely a step down.
They're a mid-major.
Yeah.
So, though, interestingly enough, Alabama's best player, that Mark Sears,
mm-hmm,
started his college career at Ohio University.
Hmm. It's a fun tidbit.
Yeah. Speaking of Alabama – The stuff I'm seeing is that Nate Oates, the coach of Alabama, is the top target for Kentucky, which would be another interconference movement.
Wow. Wow.
So we'll see. It'll be interesting. We should also talk briefly about the women's Final Four. Did you watch any of the semifinals or the championship game yesterday?
Nope. Okay. Not a lick. I know it's the most watched women's basketball game, women's college basketball game of all time.
Yeah.
Or Iowa UConn was.
Yeah, the semifinal. Yep. Yeah. Very entertaining game. There was one, I guess, bit of controversy. UConn was down one, had the ball with like 8 seconds left. And,
oh, this is the moving screen.
And they were – LSU was called for a moving screen and people lost their minds. And then when you see the replay, it is so obviously a moving screen. The only thing I can see there is – you have to be biased to not see that as a moving screen.
Yeah.
But anyway. And then championship game yesterday, South Carolina beats Iowa by 12.
Mm-hmm.
They were definitely the better team.
Yeah.
Caitlin Clark was the best player on the floor, but not enough to overcome the overall team dynamics. I watched that game and – South Carolina just destroyed them on the offensive glass. Like the second half, it felt like South Carolina's whole offense was basically just shoot the ball and we'll get the offensive rebound. Doesn't matter how good the shot is. Just throw it up towards the rim and we'll go get it and lay it in.
Hmm.
That's tough to beat. So, yeah, South Carolina, your women's Division I national title winner. We got to talk bracket.
Yeah, bracket challenge on the men's side. Number one, you just want to do top five here?
Well,
or should we do top six?
It's up to you. I mean, really, as far as I can tell, only two people can win it.
Yes, I believe that is true. So at number one, we have Joel from Ohio.
Yeah. And if UConn wins tonight,
he wins.
He wins.
Number two, we have Dave, my father-in-law.
Yeah, how about that?
He did very well, but he cannot win.
He cannot win.
Because he has UConn winning as well.
Yeah.
So obviously Joel being a single point ahead will hop him.
Yep.
And then in third place, we have Jason.
Do I know?
He goes to our church, yes.
Why am I blanking on that?
I'll tell you after.
Okay.
But he has Purdue winning. And if Purdue wins, I believe he jumps.
Yes.
Both of them.
He would win, yes. So it's either Jason, who goes by Hick Sensation.
Yes, that's his last name, is the first four letters there.
And Joel from Ohio. Those are the only two who can win it.
That's right.
Then also tied for third in terms of points is Aaron.
Who will be fourth.
Who will be fourth, yes. And then fifth, Ash.
Yep, in my small group.
Who he would move up to third. If UConn wins.
That's right.
And then you are sitting there at sixth. And if UConn wins, that means you would be in fourth. You'd finish fourth.
Yep.
Okay. Solid work there, John.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. My son notified me that we misidentified his bracket last week.
Oh, no. So we're issuing a correction? Is that what's happening right now?
Well, I'm not sure which bracket's his, to be honest. As I mentioned last week, I managed to cement my last place finish of those who completed a bracket. So the highest finisher in the family looks like it's going to be actually, we should give a shout out to Nate in Ohio's. If you come wins, he'll move up to the top five. Maybe not. Six, maybe.
Are you talking about Nathan? That is not Nathan Ohio, I don't believe. I believe that's Nathan, vice president here at Grace.
Is that really?
Yeah. I mean, there is a Greek reference in there.
Well, that's what made me think. My bad. Okay. Well, anyway.
Well, you know what? I don't know that there's another Nate, so maybe it is. I could be wrong.
All that to say, it's going to come down to Joel in Ohio or
Jason.
Jason.
In Indiana.
In Indiana. Okay. All right.
Dum, dum, dum. The drama.
Yeah. Yeah.
The drama.
So, the good thing is we can easily reach out to them.
We can get a hold of either of them.
Yeah.
I can text either of them.
Yes. We should probably say something about the NBA because there's like a week left in the season.
Is that all that's left?
Before we get to the play-in tournament.
Hmm.
And the let's see, where are your Knicks at, John?
They're like tied for third right now in the East.
Looks like they're record-wise tied for third, but they put them in the fourth spot. So they must not have the tiebreaker with
the Magic. Yeah,
yeah. But they lost Julius Randle, correct?
So Julius Randle's been out for like 3 months already.
Okay. But it was just announced that he's not coming back.
He's having shoulder surgery. So
okay.
That leaves us – we did get OG back. We did get Mitchell Robinson back. And we have Jalen Brunson. So I think we could go around maybe two in the NBA playoffs. I don't think we can win the whole thing without Julius Randle. But I like the team that they've built. They're a lot of fun to watch. Have you watched any Knicks basketball this year?
Not really. Not really.
I mean, outside of shots of James Dolan, they're a pure joy to watch. Jalen Brunson is a lot of fun.
Well, it will be a rematch. As of now, it would be a rematch between the Knicks and the Cavs from last year in round one,
mm-hmm.
a series that the Knicks won. So that could be an interesting development. Celtics, Bucks, Magic, Knicks. Cavs, Pacers, Sixers, Heat, and then the Bulls and Hawks round that out. The West, though, is even more bunched up, I guess, right? So currently, as of today, you have Minnesota and Denver tied.
Okay.
With apparently Minnesota getting the nod for the top spot. Then you have the Thunder, the Clippers, and the Mavericks. And it's one of those things where there's about a game difference between each – a game or two difference between each spot. So there's still room for some movement. The big thing I'm keeping my eyes on – well, I guess that's settled now. I think the Warriors have now clinched the 10th spot.
Yeah, I think the Rockets.
Because the Rockets lost yesterday.
I mean, they're too far out.
So you could have Lakers-Warriors in the play-in game, play-in tournament, one game to move forward. And see, here's my theory. I think when the NBA front office looks at these standings in the West – They are terrified.
Oh, because Minnesota, Denver.
None of those are big markets.
I guess the Clippers, but I mean that's the Clippers.
Nobody cares about the Clippers in LA.
Dallas is a big market.
Eh.
Phoenix, not a huge market.
Well, but I think they have enough talent. You also need to take into account like star power.
Yeah.
And Phoenix has a lot of stars potentially.
Mm-hmm.
So
the Pelicans.
Nobody cares about the Pelicans. Or the Kings.
Lakers and Warriors people care about.
Yeah. So just interesting. I don't think that bodes well for the NBA playoff ratings.
Yeah. In the, in the East, I'm looking at Boston's a big pull.
Huge.
New York's a big pull.
Yep.
Milwaukee.
But they have Giannis.
They have Giannis Antetokounmpo
and Damian Lillard.
Damian Lillard, yep.
So they have some star power there.
Cavs.
I don't think so.
Donovan Mitchell. A little bit, but he's pretty banged up, isn't he? He's not super healthy. Pacers, I don't think anybody cares about.
No.
I mean, in
obviously
Indiana.
Locally, yeah. Yes.
76ers, I think people care.
Yes, but they're well down there, right? What is that? Sixth?
Seventh. The Heat. Big market, but
who's the star there?
Jimmy? Is it Jimmy Butler still?
Yeah. Does he draw eyeballs?
Feels like in the playoffs he does.
Maybe.
But,
I don't know.
And then the Bulls.
Again, though, who's their star?
Yeah, they're a big market.
Yeah.
The Hawks and the Pistons. All right, and you've shut off your phone to look at records.
Yeah.
Do you know the Pistons' record right now?
I don't.
They're bad. Real bad.
Have they won more than 10 games?
Yes.
Okay. 12?
A little bit more.
15.
Little less. It's 13. 13 games.
So they've won 13 games. And there's probably, what, 4 games left for them?
Yeah. They've lost 65 games.
Gosh. So they can't – but they can't get to 70 then.
I guess
the
not.
The most no. losses they can have is 69.
No. They are 49 games back in the East.
That's an absurd number.
The Wizards aren't far behind. The Wizards are 47 and a half games behind in the
so
East.
So bad. So bad.
The Hornets are 43. They're all bad.
Yeah.
They're all bad.
Yep. All right, John, we got to move on. You ready to move on?
I suppose. I mean, we didn't do our extended baseball segment like we talked about, but whatever.
Another day. Another day. All right. We are continuing on in our series in J. Gresham Machen's book, Christianity and Liberalism. Last week, we discussed the first two chapters. This week, the next two. So last week, the two chapters dealt with basically the first is introduction, just kind of setting the stage for what he was dealing with. And the second one was a chapter on doctrine in general. Today's chapters, one on God and man and the other on the Bible. So by the way, I was just flipping through. You're listening to this. And so
I am listening to this.
He dedicated the book to his mom.
Did he really?
Yeah. To my mother.
Oh.
What a guy.
Yeah.
What a guy. He's a softie.
Yeah. That's what I think of when I think of Machen.
Yeah.
Softie.
Yeah, Machen. Yeah, man. Just a big old teddy bear. Okay. So just to set the stage, Machen wrote this book published in 1923 dealing with the rise of religious liberalism.
Mm-hmm.
And in particular, main lines going mm-hmm. liberal in terms of their theology.
Yes. And he's not necessarily calling out political liberals, and he's not necessarily calling out classical liberals, right?
I mean, correct.
He's calling out these theological liberals.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a Venn diagram
there is
made
a Venn,
out there
absolutely.
Of overlapping circles. But yes. He is he's responding to the sort of social gospel movement
mm-hmm.
among mainline Protestants who are abandoning doctrine, abandoning biblical beliefs in an effort to make religion usable mm-hmm. for the common man, for the modern man who doesn't have any place for, you know, supernatural things, just needs mm-hmm. a practical religion.
Yeah.
Something that we can hang on to the ethics of Christianity, but you know, some of the doctrine, of course, needs to be jettisoned.
And what did you make of this chapter on God and man?
Well, I mean, he starts off the chapter by essentially identifying that it's an interesting statement. The doctrine of God and the doctrine of man are the two great presuppositions of the gospel. That basically, if you don't have a proper doctrine of God and a proper doctrine of man, you're not going to get the gospel right.
Mm-hmm.
And he's certainly correct about that. I mean half the chapter's on
It's almost like it's two chapters together here, yeah. almost.
Yeah, I mean it makes me think a little bit about you know, Calvin basically, I think, is one of the first to clearly articulate this, at least that I can recall, is the idea that you can't rightly know yourself unless you know God, and you can't rightly know God unless you know yourself at some level. Like the, basically the knowledge of God and the knowledge of yourself and humanity are intertwined.
Yeah.
And if you get one wrong, you're almost certainly going to get the other one wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the point that Machen's really trying to make here.
Yeah, it does echo those early institutes for sure.
Mm-hmm. So what did you make of his take on sort of the God of liberal theology as he lays it out here?
Yeah, I thought he did a really interesting job of highlighting how much they love to talk God as Father, but God is nothing else, not God as judge or God as any as
yeah.
Anything else. He goes, well, this has a sort of the veneer of mm-hmm. biblical authority and biblical fidelity, but actually yeah. here's where they're missing the mark. And I thought that was really interesting to talk through. And I mean, through this, we've been trying to even look at our own times mm-hmm. and
yeah.
engage with that. And I had an easier time doing it with his Doctrine of Man,
mm-hmm.
but a little bit harder of a time doing it with Doctrine of God.
Yeah, though I think it's – I think it's still there in terms of, I mean, you hear it in political rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
You hear it in I think pop culture in terms of just this just vague sense of all of us are God's children, which is another way of talking about the fatherhood of God, I suppose, at one level.
Yeah.
And that's just not biblically true.
Well, and how I made the connection was if you watch sitcoms or dramas, there's sort of this like understanding of the universe or sort of this benevolent force in the mm-hmm. world. And I think that's similar to what he's getting at here with sort of God as Father, but sort of God as – what's the right word? Almost like God in a you know, rocking chair on a front porch at a Cracker Barrel, you know, spouting out wise things and
yeah.
just being like, oh, you darned kids, you know, with a smile on his yeah. face and
yeah.
Sort of this ultimate loving creature, nostalgic creature.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
not as like this sort of all powerful
right.
judge of the Bible that we see.
Yeah. I mean, I think it might have been A.W. Tozier who framed it this way, that basically There's this dynamic where the biblical picture is you have to hold together God's transcendence, mm-hmm. his otherness, his above us, his greatness, and God's immanence. He is near us, and mm-hmm. for believers, he is inside of us through the Spirit. That given moments in culture tend to swing between those extremes, that a culture can get so caught up in the transcendence of God, it's like you can't relate to him. But if you go too far on the immanence end of things, then you've domesticated him.
Mm-hmm.
He's just your buddy.
Yeah.
The man upstairs,
mm-hmm.
you know, the big guy upstairs.
Yeah.
You know,
Jesus is my homeboy
yeah.
sort of.
Yeah. That kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, there's a dynamic in here where he's basically trying to address this from a different angle, and part of it is he points out that the sort of God as Father is like the only doctrine of God they have.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
it. Full stop. And he's like, well, the Bible has a much richer, obviously, doctrine of God, and one component is he's the Father. He's the Father of Jesus Christ, and he's the Father of his people,
mm-hmm.
but he's also judge and redeemer and all those other aspects of his character that that are essential to his identity.
Yeah. How do you see this changed in sort of a modern way? Like how do you see the doctrine? So when I've had conversations with people that would claim Christianity, mm-hmm. they're a little bit more postmodern maybe in their philosophical outlook than I am. one of the things they say to me is like, John, you're just too definite on things. You're just too certain about things about the Father. God is a God of mystery, and I'm mm-hmm. just really okay with the mystery of God and sitting in that tension. And
yeah,
there's part of me that's just like that. That seems to be a twist on this that has come in the postmodern world, or maybe the post-postmodern world, wherever we are.
Yeah.
But yeah, do you see that as well? Sort of that. Maybe a little bit different than what he's dealing with in the 1920s.
Yeah, I think that's right. I would tie it both to the chapter before on doctrine,
uh-huh.
because our sort of cultural moment is loath to make definitive statements about God, other than just, you know, generalities.
Mm-hmm.
And I would tie it to the chapter that comes next in terms of the Bible,
yeah,
because they want to reject the Bible's authority.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it's just up to your own sort of feeling and sensibility as to what seems right
mm-hmm.
to you. So I think which I do think that leads into the doctrine of man that he gets at, which it's funny if there's anything that you know, sort of the cultural moment we live in, it's, you know, captured well by the expression expressive individualism, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, guys like Carl Truman have done a great job of tracing how that's developed. And it's almost intriguing to step back in time 100 years and kind of see the snapshot when he talks about the doctrine of man, and to see how what Machen talks about anticipates where we're at today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's sort of the, oh, that was in an earlier phase of this larger trajectory.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. What most resonated with you in the this is a very postmodern way to put it. but on the section dealing with man,
mm-hmm.
was there anything particular that stuck out?
Yeah. I was struck by he identifies what's happening in his day as a return to paganism.
Yeah, yeah, that was a fascinating turn, wasn't it?
Like, there are people out there today who are making that same claim and acting like it's this like kind of new insight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, oh, our culture's turning, you know, returning to paganism. And like, here's Machen 100 years earlier going like, we're already going back to paganism. Like, it's more in full flower than it was, in part because I think in Machen's day, there was still a cultural respectability to being loosely associated with Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And that is no longer the case in many parts of our culture.
So it's funny. He almost says that in the previous paragraph when speaking about – where he says – in speaking of paganism, in the previous paragraph he says, the change is nothing less than a substitution of paganism for Christianity as the dominant view of life. 75 years ago, Western civilization, despite inconsistencies – I assume he's talking about slavery there. That would be my guess.
Probably.
We still was still predominantly Christian. Today it's predominantly pagan. It's funny to talk to people – goodness, probably people in their 60s and 70s being like, boy, back in my day, America was a Christian nation. And here's this guy saying, boy, back in the 1850s,
right.
America was a Christian nation.
Yeah.
Or the Western civilization was a Christian nation. What do you make of that? Is that just like – a side effect of getting older in a changing world, or like what?
I'm sure some of that's in play. In some ways, I think they're talking about different things.
Okay.
Meaning, I think in Machen's day, it's still fair to say that the broad Judeo-Christian framework
mm-hmm.
was the assumption for the vast majority of the culture. Not necessarily not saying active faith,
mm-hmm.
but I'm saying if you said God, they thought the Christian God.
Yes.
You know, if you started talking about like specific kind of doctrines, they would think of the Christian form of that as sort mm-hmm. of the starting point.
Yeah.
Now that's not the case. At least I think in significant portions of our culture. Again, mm-hmm. we've talked about this before, that it's a different animal in, you know, the Bible Belt South than it is in, you know, New Hampshire,
mm-hmm.
you know, very different contexts. So I think that's part of the difference. I think what yeah. Machen is saying is he's trying to claim there was more piety, more devotion, more genuine Christianity 75 years before him than in his day.
Mm-hmm.
When people today say we are becoming pagan, I think it's less about the personal devotion and it's more about the larger frameworks of assumptions that inform our culture.
Hmm.
That'd be my guess.
What – and I believe it's in this section, although – oh, there it is. In this section where he goes to, I believe, World War I
mm-hmm.
as sort of one of the maybe world events that has influenced this.
Yeah.
What did you think of that? That was interesting to read through.
Yeah, part of what's strange to me is like reading anything between World War I and World War II
is fascinating.
It's always fascinating.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because obviously now we know what's coming down
yes,
the road.
Yes, yes.
And they're coming out of World War I like, oh my gosh, that was so terrible. Like who can imagine something
we can't
like that,
do that
ever
again.
Happening again? And it's like here we are, you know, 15 years later and it's starting back up. I don't know. Like I wasn't sure what to make of that. Part of what he does go into after that though is this idea of consciousness of sin.
Yeah.
That
the war dulled us to this.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. That in one sense maybe it's the idea that the sort of the war the scope of evil was so massive that people became dull to their own personal sin.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my take.
I just want to quote him sort of mocking the present day preacher, the preacher gets up into his pulpit, opens the Bible, and addresses the congregation somewhat as follows. You people are very good. You yeah. respond to every appeal that looks towards the welfare of the community. Now we have in the Bible, especially in the life of Jesus, something so good that we believe it is good enough even for you good people.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really good. I love the sarcasm.
Oh, dripping with sarcasm.
Yeah.
So speaking of the Bible, you ready to move on?
We have to yeah.
Yeah, we have to.
Well, I mean if
we want to make the eclipse.
I mean, look at the time. I mean, so yes, it is fascinating to see in one sense the similarities of how the Bible comes under attack today versus how it was mm-hmm. under attack then. I would say one difference, just in light of knowing what we know about his time period, he doesn't really get into this here, though I think it's kind of talked about elsewhere, is I think in Machen's day, one of the biggest stumbling blocks was the supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
How can modern man, immersed in the scientific method, believe that water can turn to wine or that a man can walk on water or that you can multiply a few loaves of bread to feed 5,000. That's impossible to believe for the modern man.
Or raise from the dead.
Or yeah, exactly.
You know, fill in the blank, yeah.
I don't think that's the same stumbling block it was then. The no. supernatural.
Yeah, I think people are way more comfortable with supernatural
yes,
stuff now.
100%.
And maybe that's a good thing that you and I don't have to fight against that in the classroom quite as much. It feels like
yeah.
something that's accepted a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a big difference.
One thing that's a little bit different, it appears different. So as I listened through this chapter, it kept sounding like, well, we want to break off pieces of the Bible. We want to get mm-hmm. rid of some of these things and sort yep. of boil it down to the values of Christianity, but not yep. this is not inspired.
Yeah.
We have what's cropped up today seems to be, and this just came out over the weekend, somebody trying to say like, here's the biblical case for fill in the blank sinful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the biblical case for LGBTQ, or here's the biblical case for
yep.
Transgenderism, or you know, fill in the blank. And that doesn't seem to be going on in his world, as far as I can tell, people using the Bible to justify their sinful behavior.
Correct.
And they just say, be like, well, is the Bible really the
right,
the inspired word of God? You know.
Yeah. There's an element, and I think I pointed this out last week. In Machen's day, you had people who wanted to hang on to the morality and the ethics and ditch the doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
Today, it's almost flipped. There's a contingency that's flipped that they want to claim to be Bible-believing Christians, but they want to jettison the certain aspects, read sexual ethics. They want to jettison that.
Sure.
Or redefine it, essentially. So, I mean, I think that is a major difference.
Yeah.
Between Machen's day and our day.
Oh yeah. What do you make? He went on several paragraphs on verbal plenary inspiration.
Yeah.
I don't think that I was necessarily expecting that, but that seemed to be a target for a number of people. That feels much less like a target today. In some ways. But specifically, I think inspiration's a target, but the actual verbal plenary inspiration is – I don't hear those words a ton like I used to.
Yeah.
Like I used to, like I'm old enough to live in the 1920s.
Yes. Well, I think he doesn't use the term inerrancy, by the way. But that's clearly what he's getting at.
Yeah.
Like he's combining verbal plenary inspiration and infallibility. So even though he doesn't use the term inerrancy, that's what he's getting at, that the Bible is without errors. But see, here's another difference. In Machen's day, it was there are errors in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to expose those. Today, it's your interpretation of the Bible is in error.
Mm-hmm.
The Bible's fine. But if you rightly understand the Bible – it actually affirms, my preferred LGBTQ.
Yeah, all of my preconceived notions. Yeah.
It actually affirms those things.
All of my priors.
I mean, I don't know if this is what you're talking about, but over the weekend, it was brought to the attention. So Richard Hayes.
Yeah, that's who I was talking about. Yeah.
World class New Testament scholar of his generation. He's got to be in his 70s by now.
Echoes of Scripture and Paul was a groundbreaking work.
Groundbreaking
right?
work. But even before – well, even – and then after that, one of his most significant works was The Moral Vision of the New Testament, which was basically laying out kind of a New Testament ethics.
Hmm.
And in that book, he reluctantly comes to the conclusion that the Bible prohibits homosexual relationships.
Yeah. Well, I mean he's down at what? Duke Divinity School, right?
But that came out in 1996.
Okay. So coming up on 30 years.
And now in a book that's about to be released, he's changed his mind on that. He now thinks that the New Testament allows for that.
Hmm.
That there's as he and his son wrote this, interestingly enough.
Yes.
That there's a wideness in God's mercy.
Expanding the mercy of God, I think is the title.
Yeah. So
we should have him on. We should read the book this summer and bring.
Did you? I don't know if I told you. He was almost my external reader for my dissertation.
Really?
Yeah, almost.
He would have been great for you.
He had to turn it down. But
that would have been quite a feather in the cap.
It would have been fun.
Who knows where your career would have gone?
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay. I'm blown away. That's the biggest news of the day, and there's an eclipse later.
Stop. So next week, do we decide what we're doing?
I think two more chapters. How many chapters we got left?
There's three left. Do we decide? Boy, one of those is big.
Is it the last one?
No, it's the middle one, unfortunately.
Of course it is.
You want to do the next two? Let's do Christ and Salvation, and then we'll do church and then big picture reflections. Let's do that.
Okay.
Let's do that. So next two chapters. Yep. All right. Time now for This Day in Sports History.
All right. This Day in Sports History, April 9th, 2024, April 9th.
The day after the eclipse.
The day after the eclipse. 1974, San Diego Padres. By the way, the Padres like uniform and like the friar hitting a baseball, it's so good. Mm-hmm. It's so good. San Diego Padres owner Ray Kroc addresses fans, ladies and gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, I suffer with you. I've never seen such stupid baseball playing in my life.
Can you imagine your owner coming out and saying that?
I'm a Mets fan. I could.
Okay.
I absolutely could. 1978, Denver's David Thompson battling San Antonio's George Gervin for the NBA season scoring title scores 73 points against the Detroit Pistons. Must have been playing the 2024 Detroit Pistons.
Yeah.
It's the third highest output ever in an NBA game. Gervin, not to be outdone, later scored 63 against the Jazz.
The New Orleans Jazz.
Which makes more sense than Utah.
Oh, 100%.
I'm not sure Jazz has ever been played in Utah.
Probably not.
It's just enough to give Gervin the scoring crown, 27.22 points per game to Thompson's 27.15, the tightest one-two finish ever.
Do you know either of those men's nicknames? I think George Gervin's is gettable. David Thompson's is harder.
I wouldn't know David Thompson's. I've definitely heard George Gervin's.
Yeah.
What is it?
He's the Iceman.
The Iceman.
And David Thompson was Skywalker. Because of his jumping ability.
Yeah. Okay. What year was this? So this would have been right around
late 70s.
Right around
the Star Wars. The recent release of the first one.
1994, former Chicago Bulls shooting guard Michael Jordan made his professional baseball debut. Going hitless for the White Sox AA Birmingham, Binghamton. Got Mets on the brain.
There you go.
1994.
Yeah.
During his suspension, right? His year-long suspension from basketball.
Okay, conspiracy.
Yeah. 2001, Australia set a record for the most one-sided international win in FIFA history, beating the Tonga 22-0 in Oceania Group 1 qualifying match for the 2002 World Cup.
That's a lot of goals.
That's a lot of goals. The 2002 World Cup, wasn't that an Olympic year, Sydney, Australia?
Well, Summer Olympics are in the like 2000. It would be 2000, 2004, 2000.
Okay, so it's the 2000 then. Okay. 2016, Drake Caligula. I want to say Caligula.
I know.
Scores twice in the third period, and Brock Boeser has a goal and three assists to help North Dakota win its eighth NCAA hockey championship, 5-1. Over top-seeded Quinnipiac.
Yeah.
Okay. I was waiting for – I thought I heard a little breath that indicated to me that I mispronounced something.
All right. Who do you like?
I like Ray Kroc.
Ray Kroc?
Ray Kroc. The first task of a leader is to define reality, and I believe he did that with that sentence.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, I suffer with you. I've never seen such stupid baseball playing in my life.
There you go.
Defining reality.
One thing you liked.
I'm gonna put out another TV show. It's a network television show, but it's called Ghost. Have you heard of this?
Yes.
There is occasional content, so be warned. But this couple moves from Manhattan out to Long Island or maybe Connecticut, and they inherit this giant mansion and go to basically open a bed and breakfast there, and while they're looking at it initially, all these ghosts are walking around just like, oh, don't do that. That's stupid. And they're all from these different eras of the house, going all the way back to like Native Americans who were there, who died on the property, a Viking, you know, all these people who died on the property.
Okay.
And the woman falls down the stairs as they're leaving and clinically dies for several minutes.
Mm-hmm.
They revive her, and when she comes back to this house, she's able to see and interact with the ghost.
Oh, okay.
And so it's like this whole thing. The husband is a world-class chef, and so he's cooking at the bed and breakfast. And he's just like, are you talking to ghosts again? Which ones are in the room right now? You know, it's a very funny show, and they have some funny and some heartwarming moments.
What platform is that on?
That's CBS, so it's
Paramount Plus. Okay. All right. For me, I'm going to go with Saturday. I'm going to hit it from two different angles. One is it was my oldest son's birthday.
Nice.
And so we had celebrated the weekend before, so he was not with us. But and just the lovely weather. And so we fired up the grill for the first time this
nice.
Spring. Grilled some steaks for dinner and enjoyed those as we watched the Purdue-NC State game.
Mm.
It was delightful.
I mowed the grass for the first. Have you mowed the grass?
It's on my to-do list this upcoming weekend.
Okay.
That and submit my taxes.
Yeah. I've done both now.
Yeah. Well.
I have a cheat code when it comes to taxes.
You do. Yes. 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 Maybe I need to avail myself to your cheat code. I can't afford how much your debt would cost probably to do my taxes. But
He might do it. He might do it at a very reasonable cost.
All right. Well. All right. Well, Scott in Indiana, if you want to reach out to me and
I'll see if I can broker it. Probably not this year.
Well, yeah, it's too late.
But probably next year I'll reach out, see, you know.
Okay.
Test the waters a bit.
Yeah.
He sits down on this past weekend he sat down, I think he did like 10 people's taxes or something like that.
Okay. Yeah. I might want to have a conversation with your dad. Just big picture ballpark stuff of things I can be doing to maybe limit my tax liability these days. So, but that is my one thing I liked. Okay. John, we have talked basketball. We have talked Christianity and liberalism, part two. We have talked Ray Kroc. We have talked about the show's called Ghosts.
Ghost.
And we've talked about grilling steaks on a lovely spring afternoon. And of course, we've talked about the end of the world with the coming.
We need to get to it,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah. So if this is our last broadcast, we want to thank you for listening for these 223 episodes.
Yeah.
Not that anybody will be around to
upload it.
Upload
it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, John, we have done what we always do on this program. We have wandered through our various and sundry topics. And so all that's left to say is until next time. Y'all real good.
Later.